G2, number 8B.
You see, out of this point, that life, truth and love is the success mechanism. You know, round about the beginning of the 30th, John Dolly began to say, Christian Science is the science of all sciences. I remember that. Perhaps he had said it before, anyway, I can remember it round about the beginning of the 30th. But Christian Science is the science of all sciences. You know that in 1936, the first Polish scientist began to investigate the science of sciences. And afterwards it was picked up after the war in Yale University, I think it was, and picked it up. What they began to investigate was to see that science itself has a science. That science is not built by people. That science has its own life. The Eigenlebendigkeit, the Wahrheit, how could it translate that? The own life ability of truth itself. They began to show, really, that life, truth and love, as the success mechanism, is something which exists per se, so to say, independent, so to say, of the scientists. That science will develop just the same, no matter if there is an Einstein or not an Einstein, if there is a Galilei or not a Galilei, because it has its own vivacity, its own life, it will always find, science itself will always find that one who will speak out and spell out what the science itself wants to bring forth. They show exactly life, truth and love. They show that the science of science is life, truth and love. They call life, they call it the acceleration of science. They can see that because of the feedback which we have seen here, that the answer is already there before you start, because the truth, the perfection of the answer is already there. Because of that, life accelerates constantly through this feedback. And therefore we have a tremendous acceleration of scientific findings, of scientific discoveries, of the number of scientists as we have seen yesterday, and that once that feedback has started, that it accelerates in an exponential way. Again we get that curve which we had yesterday. You see? We were asking, what is the phenomena that turned here the horizontal to the vertical? Here we have another answer. It's again feedback. Feedback of knowledge. They say truth. They say truth has its own logicity. You know what this means, logicity? From logic, no? Truth has its own logicity. Is that true? We always found, no, so no, these are the great discoverers, the great professors, the great thinkers that have such good brainwaves that they are able to discover something. And they began to analyze it and began to see that the great discoveries that have been made were always, now, what is the term? There were always discoveries which at least two or three or four or up to eight made at the same time independent of each other. Mehrfach und Deckungen. But multiple discoveries. That all of the essential discoveries, there are multiple discoveries, and they give a wonderful list of all the main things and show that they have been discovered at the same time by two, by three, by four, by six, by seven, up to eight people independent of each other, always a little bit in a different way, perhaps a little bit in a different stage, in a different era, but they could see that if not one of these discoverers would lend himself to be used by the scanner and to be used for the advancement of science, another one would be used because there is that multiple discovery. And they begin to see that this line of discovery has the sense of love. They call it that it is goal directing. Goal directedness, they call it. Goal directedness. Goldsmith almost called it goal. They are Goldsmith, the scientists. Goal directedness. They can see that the discoveries which have been made through the centuries are not random discoveries. They have a logicity in themselves, truth. They are so logically coming one after the other that not one comes too early. They speak of the right time, when the time is right for a discovery, so that it has its own logicity, its own reason of progressing, and therefore can see the teleological sense in the science, that it has an inner determinism, an inner purposive motion within itself. And they call it all sorts of things, just to show you how they begin to see, you see, that the personality of the scientist is exchangeable. I'll say to that, is exchangeable. That it is good, and they naturally show what the qualities of a good discoverer is, what the qualities of a good scientist is, the openness of it, the world-mindedness, the wide-mindedness, and so on. But they show that they show that science has started with a big discovery, perhaps gone to another. Another one has gone this way, another this way, another from there, perhaps this way, and lost itself. But it always had afterwards somehow a great drive. No matter if somebody was thinking this way or this way on this, there was always finally a logicity in it. And therefore a goal-directedness in science itself. The logic of the subject itself drives towards this. If somebody goes this way and this way to a little branch, he can do that. It's necessary. But the main thing will always come this way. It has within itself the drive of life to go forward. Well, see, this is, I think, what we can see then in an absolute way, that within being, therefore within ourselves, is that life, truth and love as a success mechanism constantly as well. And the more we lend ourselves to the being one with it and accept it and let it happen, the more we let the little ego out of the picture, the more this logicity will work within ourselves in the highest degree, namely as truth itself. Well, we could go on in this vein. I would have loved to show you the absolute latest presentation of a Nobel Prize winner, just only 2 weeks old, that he presented to Heisenberg and some others, the new theory of evolution, which he has found out. I would have liked to show it, but it takes more time. But I just can tell you, show you this, that what he has seen, that the old sense of evolution as a mechanical process, as Darwinism, just more or less as a mechanical process of choosing and of adapting to environment and survival of the fittest and so on, is naturally not right. One has seen something about the DNA and about how the genes are decoded, the chromosome chain is decoded, and how one has found the code of life and the code program that is programmed in every cell. And so, and now he comes and gives a nice additional sense. He says, now we see that this is not right. You see, it is right and wrong. It is right, it is not right, because it is building on a mechanical process of cause and effect. And he shows it as a feedback. And he shows it as the whole feedback from, well,
which one?
Evolution. Let's see if we find it.
Yeah.
I took. Do you have to go up to the chain or? See, in black, I tried to show what one was thinking up to recently. That everything of evolution starts what he calls a primeval soup. A soup where everything is just mixed up. And everything is in it. And all the elements are there, but disordered and so on. That from this primeval soup, through an accidental start, which is accidental, came up a living cell. They can calculate very easily that it must have been an accidental, because on the law of probability, it would have taken, instead of only 1 billion years, it would have taken instead of 1 billion years to produce the first cell, it would have taken 1 billion years. See, exponential, how do you call it? You never know that when you exponent. Power of. Yeah. Instead of one with 243 notes at the end, until, according to the law of probability, a first living cell could have been formed out of this primeval soup. So they see that something must admit an accidental start for the first living cell. Then from there they could see that in each cell are the genes. And in the genes is a whole code which contains the whole program for the whole structure of the body. And recently, in the 50s, one has deciphered this code. One could decipher this code as a chain of genes in the chromosome. And could see that the DNA, that the nucleic acid, forms all code patterns. Within that cell, all code patterns are formed. Within each cell, the pattern is already there for the lung, for the eye, and for the feet, and for the nose, and for the bowels, and so on. All the things that one is not allowed to say in English. And that DNA, you see, the nucleic acid, contains all the information, really, for the functions of the whole body. This DNA, together with the enzymes come from leavening. You see, enzyme is the Greek for leavening. By leavening, copies this information constantly. So that each cell recopies them, and hands over the information, and so specific forms of life functions are being brought out. This is called evolution. Now, this was up to recently the concept they had, and now Professor Eigen, he's a Nobel Prize winner biologist. That which is in red is what Professor Eigen was telling a few weeks ago. He said, yes, there is that primeval soup. But from where does that primeval soup take the accidental start? And he says, above that primeval soup exists a primeval information. We come back to information. Exists a primeval information. And that primeval information has within itself a goal-certain ability for selection. It has a goal-certain ability for selection. Because he has in that information, is that thing called picking out the right thing out of a million, the billions, the scanner, the crime. You see, because that mind, that infinite mind, has a Christ in our terminology. See, it has within itself a selection ability, so that it didn't have to wait for the law of probability to wait that many billion years here. for the first cell to happen. So he traces out that it was an accidental start. And he said, no, it was goal-directed. See, that is the wonder. You see, there must exist in being, which we just can somehow feel or touch, that in being exists that Christ sense, that information sense, which has the ability to pick out of that much, just the right one, that brings about the formation of the first cell. So it is goal-directed. And he thinks that he can even mathematically calculate which elements lend themselves for that selection ability. And naturally, through this, we have an increase of the selection value. Because in the cell is stored up all the information of the preceding evolution. Every cell has been inserted in the genes, the information of all the preceding evolution. Because of that, through the goal direction and the selection, you get a terrific acceleration again, you see, to increase that goal selection, and therefore brings out new forms of evolution, not on what he says, the law of causality, but through the feedback to the living cells. Here you have all information of preceding evolution stored. So he takes away the whole evolution out of the cause and effect consciousness. He says it's not true that evolution is going on new form. And these new forms, because of the feedback, feed in again new information in the cell. You have a terrific round going always quicker and quicker and quicker and quicker, so that it is a question if there is mutation, or if mutation is only a very quick evolution. We don't know. Whatever it is, it shows that again the one great information of the great information of being, we should take it away, is really running on that infinite one mind, and with this I really could come to the last stage, to the comprehensive stage, you see, running on that one infinite information, which is neither matter, energy, nor subjectivity, nor thinking, which is fixed in being. We would call it, the divine mind, which contains all the information, which has a Christ, and that Christ has that wonderful ability of selecting just that which is right for every situation, adapted to every situation. And on that information runs the whole being, on that one great feedback. So that more and more, really, human thinking goes out, more and more, really, even reasoning goes out, the law of causality goes out, that there is just finally mind organizing itself as mind, spirit organizing itself as spirit, soul organizing and self organizing itself as spirit, and soul, principle, and life, self organizing itself as spirit, as one big self-contained whole. See, in this way we really would touch the oneness of being, the wholeness of being, the comprehensive sense of being, and clearly would show that if we have studied our categories right, if we get the feel of the categories right, then we get the system, then we get the matrices, then we get the structure through the intertwining of systems, we get the dimensions clearer and clearer, and see that the dimensions are showing the cybernetic rhythm until all is one, and so it melts into just the oneness of being. So with these 15 root notions, root factors of being, really they would lead us finally just to the one. Just to the one. So that the super symbolization of the 15 would be the one. 15. 15. Now there are in the Mother Church, in the original, just wait a moment, in the original Mother Church, there are 15 pictures in the window. And they symbolize various incidents out of the Bible, mostly out of the Bible. And the last one, the 15th, 14th and 15th, are on the gallery, and nobody can see them, except the first reader. And the first reader steps aside to the right and can see up there that window. The audience can't see it, because the audience can't see just right through that thing. Only the first reader, if he steps aside from the textbook, and he can see it. And that window is this one. It's this one. That's the 14th, that's the 15th. 14th, where the Bible and textbook is closed. The 15th, where you have just one translucent window. That's all. People have said, Mrs. Eddy didn't know what to put there in. Her imagination couldn't find out another picture out of the Bible. Think of it. We have studied our Bible, our textbook, in a scientific way, a structure, a dimension, seeing in it the cybernetics of it, then we can close, and then there is just that one 15th window, just the one left. Absolute, transparent, translucent. Then we come to that point where she does no more say that science is the prison of truth. And it is just there where she says, truth is a revelation. Okay. Oh, sorry. Yes, I forgot to say, sorry, you should have waited. People were asking, what about the seminar? Because I said this is for them. You want to forgive me? I don't know. I just feel at this moment I am so busy with all sorts of things that for the moment I just don't see an opportunity of holding any seminar until at least the next summer. I just wouldn't know when to do it. And so I must leave it for the moment, and perhaps what we could do is, if we would like to have something like this, that perhaps we would first find a place, quiet place, just for about 25-30 people, where they could stay for a week or so in the summer, and then I could give a seminar perhaps the South Coast or West or wherever it is appropriate. I must leave that absolutely open and could perhaps come over for a week and we could have a seminar on that. If there are more than 30 people, I would have a second week added to it or at another place. But this is all very indefinite. I'm just feeling in a state where I just feel I can't fix anything. You must forgive me. Okay.